Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Just a little update. I went over to CBS to a place called Television City today, and I spoke with some very nice people. The reason why I tell you guys this is because I, throughout my life, struggle, as you do, to find a way where I can throw a couple of bucks in the bank and just get out of the race. You know what I'm saying? Buy that sailboat, you know, sit there on it, just like that guy in Shawshank Redemption, you know, scrub down the deck, buy the boat, go shrimping, take people to an island. I don't know what I want to do, but something where I can just sit. I don't care what it is, as long as I'm on my fat ass in Hana someplace. Like up that beach on the way up to the airport, you know, that 50-mile drive that goes back and forth, and everybody says it takes you 15 hours to get all the way down to Hana from the airport, and it only takes me 90 minutes because I go like a bat out of hell, you know, that road. And if you've ever been down that, you see the coast there? Is there some place? Is there a trailer I can stick there? Is there just a hole I can dig and put a palm frond over the top of it? That's all I want. So I will therefore take any job, go anywhere, and do anything for money. That's me. I'm Phil Hendry. Welcome to our show. I do anything for money. And so I went over to CBS today, and they were very nice, and they said, well, we may be interested in you for a TV show we want to do where you'd be this ugly guy on the show, and you would do this and that. I said, thank you very much. And now I said, you know, I was doing that thing at NBC. They said, well, NBC is the pretty network. I said, yeah, I never could figure that out. They got Friends. Why would they want to do a show with me? Because I'm about as ugly as they get. And they said, because, Phil, welcome to CBS. We hire ugly people here. We hire ugly bastards here. All you got to do is take one long look at Kevin James. Just take one good fat look at Ray Romano or that other, what's his name, Mike Murphy. Yeah, you're right up our alley. And if you need us to, we can also mention Letterman. Hello. So I said, yeah, you got it. You got me convinced. So who knows? You may see my ugly face on a CBS show, or you probably will not, because that's the game. But I like to keep you guys updated on my never-ending struggle to find a way to start that shrimping business, to start that, you know, to take people on all-day charters, to cook, you know, sand dabs for some newly married couple. I don't know. You know these charters you can take out of Miami? You can get a boat, and the guy will take you and your wife out for your little anniversary, and he'll sail around, and he'll cook you lunch and everything. It sounds too scary for me. I don't know. It sounds like a hijacking. It sounds like a Shanghai waiting to happen. I'd like to wear shorts, an eye patch, lift some weights, sail up and down the coast, become that weird man that lives in that house over there. Some say he used to be on a radio station somewhere, you know, and the kids wander in. I'll just go, all right, get your asses out of here. Just a voice from the house. Remember when you were a kid? Just got on, and that's all you needed. You just go. All you had to do was see an adult and you're gone. One time I was messing around in a busted down train station in Arcadia back in when I was a kid. And it was this old broken down train station on a railroad track on the way into Pasadena. And I'm running around in there like kids do. And I'm throwing rocks and busting windows. And suddenly one of my friends says, there's a bum in here. Okay, now all you got to say is there's a bum in here. Every kid knows what that is. And I took off running, and I turned, and there was a big fat bum lumbering after me. This big fat guy. Or was it my mind? You know, to this day, I wonder if my mind filled that in. But all I know is every other kid had gotten out before me, right? And I took off, and I'm running. I get up to Foothill. I hang a left. I had to have run. And at top speed for an 11-year-old kid, I mean, I was going. Okay? I must have run probably 2 miles down to the Sears and Roebuck. And I get over to the lube bay, and I'm like, and suddenly it occurs to me, how fast do I think that bum can run? What is he, Jesse Owens back there? Is Carl Lewis was sleeping at a railroad station? Carl Lewis was sleeping at a busted-down old rail station. I'm like, what the hell am I running? This, you know, and I never again did I ever overreact to anything. Yeah, not much. So just anything. I'd like to be that old guy there on the edge of the beach, just eating rat and drinking night train, you know, just drinking some fortified wine. And late at night, people can hear me singing. You know, oh, there he goes again, Eddie. Jesus, should we call the police again? No, no, he'll just get angry like he did and set the carport on fire again. You know, you'll hear, excuse me. And I'll just be walking around on a peg leg. That's all I want. And anything that I can do, we're just sucking it away, man. We just suck the dope. Take it from me. Believe me. I know life is a beautiful thing. You want to take all your bread and you want to spend it in every direction. Sure, you can have some laughs. Take it from me. I'm telling you, from a guy who was counting pennies when he turned 38. Stick some of that stuff in the bank, man. I don't care. You want to know what you had to invest in? Forget about the stock market. What are you kidding with that? What do you know about the stock market, right? What do I know about this? We don't know anything about the stock market. Quit it. The thing you ought to be buying, you ought to be buying land. You ought to be buying real estate. Buy a house, man. Buy a house, then buy another one. And then sell that one for a couple of bucks. Then buy another one, sell that one for a couple of bucks. Next thing you know, you're Jerry Buss. That's what you got to do. What is that stock market? You know, the people are losing. Of course, my in-laws claim they've lost $6 million on paper. Yeah, okay, so what does that mean? $6 million on paper. You never had it. You never spent it. Now you've lost it. Get out of here. Now, the stock market's for, that's for some pretty heavy hitters. Let's face it. The stock market is for some serious players. People, it's like the guys that are playing the high-stakes poker games in Vegas. You want to get into that, huh? You want to get raped? Go ahead. Be my guest, friend. I'll wait for you over here at the bar. I'm going to go get a beer. What's left of you can come on over and I'll buy you one. Or do you want to get smart? Buy real estate. Buy the land. Buy the dirt. Buy the house. Just buy the land. Because that is something you can look at. And if you want to sell it to somebody, you can always bring them by and say, there, that's what I'm selling. It's not some stock certificate or a portfolio or a prospectus. And land, unless you live in the middle of Broken Whistle, Montana, baby, land does not lose its value. It holds it or increases. So go and buy some of that. And so that's all of this is going through my mind as I'm talking to these very nice people over at CBS. And when I heard that they hire and specialize in hiring ugly guys like me, maybe I got a shot. I don't know. So I'll keep you guys posted on how the thing goes. Today, of course, we have a visit from Paul Tubby Lane. Now, he is an amazing guy. Paul used to be a driver on the NASCAR circuit. Now he promotes NASCAR. And I think you're going to be interested to hear what he has in mind for marketing NASCAR. Do you know that some of the biggest demographic for NASCAR is among gay people, gay men and lesbians? And Paul Lane believes that this is a demographic that's been ignored long enough, and they definitely want to do a little marketing. Also coming up, Russell Crowe and Mark Garagos has been doing some things that are stupid. Again, he's Scott Peterson's lawyer. And I think he's dumb. I didn't think he was, but today after I read this, I'm pretty sure he is. Also, obesity costs companies, so they say, and cloning research. Do you realize that the idea of trying to make cloning illegal, of course, is idiotic, not because it should be legal or not. There's no way that you can possibly police that. All you're doing is you're encouraging mad scientists. If you make cloning illegal, you're encouraging some Victor Frankenstein out there. I'll clone another sheep. You know, well, who needs that? Next thing you know, the guy's going to be like, what was Luther Burbank? What did he do? He spliced plants together. You know, the guy that melded like a tangerine with a nectarine and he came up with a wolverine, or whatever he came up with. These mad scientists are out there in a laboratory someplace out in upper Wisconsin where Ed Gein buried people. And they are now, you know, working on fusing the black man with the white man, and they're going to come up with, when you fuse a black guy with a white guy, who do you come up with? Gene Wilder. So I don't know. All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
It's time now for more about crazed dope-smoking teens. I'm Phil Henry with Volume 1.
Heaven.
Now,
I'm in heaven.
I used to smoke pot when I was in high school. Now, it's not anything that I'm proudly admitting. And let me just tell you this before we go any further. People who say,
Well, you smoked dope, Mr. Henry, and everything's okay with you. Why can't I?
Well, I don't know, man, if everything's okay with me. Took me 20 years to get my act together. Took me 20 years to get my stuff together, friend. So if you think that's being okay, I got out of high school and I walked around with my thumb parked for about 20 years before I finally figured out what I wanted to do with my life. If you think that's good, if that's something you want to do, walk around until you're 40 with your thumb parked so far up your rear end that you can scratch your freaking tonsils with it. Be my guest.
Seem to vanish like.
Just thought I'd pot that up to kind of, you know, flatten the edge off the situation. Now, in any event, nearly 30% of 16 to 17-year-olds say they've taken money from their parents without permission. I used to do that all the time. I used to steal 20s out of my father's wallet all the time. All the time. When I was in grade school, when I was 13. The survey also found that 44% of 16 to 17-year-olds reported they had smoked marijuana, while 26% reported having stayed out all night without permission. Yeah, that's called joyriding, and smoking weed, yes. In fact, there was a lot of dope smoking going on in the 1960s in high school. I get so sick and tired of reading these surveys as if it's a newsflash that today's teenagers are doing something never before done. And if I get one more adult telling me about how it was different when they were a kid, I'm going to scream.
Will carry me through to heaven.
Okay? Yeah, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't all belong. Who do you think you're talking to, pal? I smoked pot and I stole from my parents and I went out joyriding all night long when I was 16 years old. Now, one of the surveys you gave me, Janice, said that smoking marijuana appears to increase risk-taking in youth. I don't know whether that's true or not, if I took more risks or not, but I know that it was a sign, it was a symbol of some kind of rebellion that I needed to go through, right? The other thing about smoking marijuana when you're in high school is it's much easier to hide from your parents. Much easier than drinking, you see? See, what I'm saying is this. The hypocrisy of this society, and the reason why kids are pissed off, is when you say don't use drugs, and then you go out and you have yourself a six-pack of beer, you drink wine, that crap's been going on for 50 years. You better find another way of pitching this story to kids, right? Recreational drug use is legal in the United States. It's just that it's alcohol, it's not marijuana. Recreational drug use, therefore, is also condoned in the United States. It's just alcohol, it's not marijuana. If you smoke marijuana recreationally, it doesn't mean you have a problem. It means that you are violating the law. However, if you're a kid and you're doing any mind-altering drug every day, there is something wrong with you. Just like if you're an adult and you're doing a mind-altering drug every day, there's something wrong with you. You know, you see, there's like a million different levels to this dope thing and why we can't get a handle on it. First of all, we can't get a handle on it because the parents and the adults that are talking about it are full of crap. Number two, we can't get a handle on it because we don't know the difference and can't define it between legal recreational use and illegal use. And that makes us look stupid. Number three, we won't admit to our kids that we're all flawed people. And this isn't a new problem with a new generation. It's been going on for over 50 years. The 16 and 17-year-olds who reported, first of all, the reason why I smoke dope every day is my mother was clueless. She didn't know what was going on. She couldn't find it with both hands if they paid her. That's the house I grew up in. Sorry, but that was it. Okay? And my old man, he couldn't care less. I smoked before school. I smoked after school. And that's what I did. As a matter of fact, at one point, I dropped acid before I went to class my junior year. And there's my mother thinking I'm just one happy clam, just a happy kid sleeping on a couch. I'm just a happy kid. Where are you going now, honey? Well, I'm going to go out and just, I don't know, just drive around with my friends. Oh, okay, have fun. You got it. You know, and why does this happen? Because you don't have any parenting. I didn't have any parenting when I was a kid. I had none. And when I say I had none, I'm telling you I had none. I'm not exaggerating. I didn't have any. So you worried about your kid smoking dope? Start talking to the kid. That's A. And quit lying to these kids about how, you know, 30% are smoking this and 25% don't do that, and we never did it, and everybody did it. And talk about stealing money from your parents. Didn't you steal money, Pelton? You look like the kind of thief that'd do that. You didn't? How about you, Janice? Yeah, she ripped her old man off. You bet she did. And he owed you, didn't he? Damn right. How am I supposed to make money? Yeah, but that lousy paper route that I had with the Arcadia Tribune, forget it. I ain't going to make any money that. Then I had to go out and wash windows for these old ladies in the Mother Goose shoes, and they had, you know, you'd go up to Upper Sierra Madre where all that old Midwest money was living. And I worked for cash, too. Don't be starting to lay a little guilt trip on me. I just, you know, what do you call it? Stealing ain't work? So I washed windows in the summertime and all of that. But these guys come out with these reports, and what are adults doing when they smoke dope? 16 to 17-year-olds who reported staying out all night without permission, 72% reported that they had tried smoking pot. What about people over the age of 30? Have they admitted staying out all night, too? How many of them smoke marijuana? And are they more risk-taking after they smoke it? And if that is a fact, people ought to smoke more. If you tend to take more risks after smoking marijuana, by God, you can smoke more of that stuff if you're of age. There's never going to be a handle on a drug problem with kids until the adults quit being such just dyed-in-the-wool hypocrites. Just hypocrites. Drugs are going to really hurt you, kid. Well, what the hell is that? And the example of that, of course, is Ozzy Osbourne. Look at that poor stumble bum. He couldn't explain the dangers of drugs if somebody put two barrels of a loaded shotgun in his mouth. What the hell are you kidding me? No wonder your kid's got a drug problem. Waking up and looking at you every day, give me a drug problem too. You wouldn't have to open your mouth. I'd want to go out and do a couple of blasts. I'd want to go. Are you kidding me? I'd go out and just burn a rock right then and there. Just to kick the day off, just to give it a nice little shine, you know? Just going out and blast up a rock as soon as I took a look at the old man there, crapping in his pants and stumbling across the kitchen floor looking for a cup of tea? You got to be putting me on. And the sad part about that show is the Osbournes, I guess, think that they're admired. Do I get the feeling that Sharon Osbourne believes she's a woman that is admired? She's not admired. People laugh at you, Sharon. They laugh at you, and they laugh at your inability to control your family. And they laugh at your husband and his burned-out, drug-soaked ways, and they feel pity for your kids. We watch your show, and we say, thank you, Jesus, that I ain't them, other than the house. And there'd be some changes I'd make to your house, believe me. First of all, I'd burn your furniture, but other than that, I like the new pool you're putting in, or put in, I should say. I like your house, Sharon, but I'd have to take all your furniture out in the driveway and set fire to it. So 9% of youth aged 12 and 13 reported having symptoms of depression. What, are you kidding me? When I was in high school, some kid hung himself in the boy's head. Quit with your studies, okay? Why don't you people start having a little contact with your kids? And quit lying to them. And watch the Osbournes. Because I hear it's really, 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 really funny. You imagine getting up in the morning? Oh, son, you want to go to a ball game? Yeah, I do, Dad, alone. But, all right, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, Paul Tubby Lane on our show. Paul's going to talk about the new big NASCAR demographic, gay people.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-866-866. The Bill Henry Show is back.
Yesterday we had Austin Amarco on our show. He is actually a cabinet maker from Lancaster, California, but he and his wife are involved in re-educating parents as to the evils, as to the threats of the Harry Potter books. He says they're wrong, but a caller calls to say there's nothing wrong with them. Maybe there's something wrong with Austin.
Bill Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Well, I think that you're very wrong. I think all children are entitled to fantasies. Now, let me finish what I'm going to say.
I grew up with Winnie the Pooh, A.A. Milne.
I grew up with Wizard of Oz. I grew up with Cinderella. I don't know that these people were on hop, as you say,
but I feel
that you're out of line.
Now, can I ask you a question? Did you say that you played with your Pooh?
I grew up with Winnie the Pooh.
She said Winnie the Pooh.
Are you familiar with A.A. Milne, sir?
Ma'am,
the author A.A. Milne, are you familiar with him at all?
You're talking about Alcoholics Anonymous.
No, the author, A.A. Milne, he wrote Winnie the Pooh.
All right, all I heard was the woman said she played with her Pooh, which I thought...
Sir, you're out of line.
Ma'am...
Absolutely out of line. Absolutely out of line.
Ma'am, Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland...
I'm not talking about Lewis Carroll. I'm talking about...
Was a hophead.
I'm talking about the man that wrote Winnie the Pooh. I'm talking about the man that wrote The Wizard of Oz.
Now, who wrote Wizard of Oz?
I believe his name was Braun.
Well, I thought it was Bert Lahr.
Bert Lahr played the lion in the movie.
Oh my.
Sir, where did you get your education?
Ma'am, I confess I have a high school degree. From my high school in Louisville, Kentucky. I do not have college, but I love my grandchildren. I love my children.
All right, sir, I didn't graduate from college either.
Well, then you
but I am very well read.
You can hardly... Well, I don't call reading books about Pooh or whatever that was.
Winnie the Pooh, sir, was a famous child's book.
Whatever you say. But the... All right,
and,
I know.
Sir, I am 71 years old. I have 5 grandchildren. I have 4 great-grandchildren.
Ma'am, look. J.K. Rowling, who wrote the book Harry Potter, is British. And as you know...
And so was A.A. Milne, as a matter of fact,
well,
who wrote Winnie the Pooh. And
right.
So was the man that wrote The Wizard of Oz.
All right, now wait a minute. Judy Garland wrote The Wizard of Oz.
Oh... Sir,
oh, man.
You are so out of line.
No, ma'am.
Judy Garland was in The Wizard of Oz. Wow.
Mr. Henry, you can laugh at me all you want.
Well, I'm going to laugh at a guy that thinks Judy Garland wrote The Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Frank Braun, I think, Joan, is the
yes,
man's name.
Thank you. I thought it was Braun, but I wasn't sure.
Well, who's Judy Garland?
She played the kid. Who's Judy Garland?
Look,
sir,
ma'am, most
British...
What
are you on tonight? What are you on?
Now, ma'am, that is uncalled for. You don't have to say that. The
Why
fact
don't
is that I have a bipolar condition, and I am taking two different antipsychotics. One is Limbitrol, and the other is Desaril.
So you're on medication.
What's that got to do with anything?
Well, because you're talking like it.
I'm talking like what? Have you
like
read the,
you're on something.
Have you read the Harry Potter books, or you just like to hear the sound of your voice?
No, I have read the Harry Potter books. And also, I have another thing that I'd like to say. There are a lot of people that I know that are on welfare that have bettered themselves. I have nothing but admiration for this woman who...
Absolutely. I agree with you, ma'am. I'm just saying, did anyone check her for scabbing? That's all.
And I'm asking you again, what are you on?
I told you I do take medication for a bipolar condition.
Well,
are you high?
You better take another look at yourself, sir.
Ma'am, don't you think before J.K. Rowling was allowed into a publishing house or a magazine or newspaper publishing house that someone would have checked her for scabbing or pus?
Bill Henry Show.
God.
Comedy gold.
Yes. Yes. That's what we talk about when we talk about the Phil Henry Show. Right there. Okay, so, and I loved her. You better think about having your head re-examined. Anyway, we'd like to thank Betty White for calling. All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. Okay, Scott Peterson's lawyer, you know Scott, he's the guy that's up there in the little town. They say he killed his wife. Scott Peterson's lawyer has a lot to say for someone subject to a court order. He thinks the judge erred in issuing the order, and he wants to be able to talk about... Oh, I see. He wants the high-profile attorney representing his client's mistress found in contempt for speaking out. Oh, my God. So, in other words, this guy, Garagos, wants Allred to be held in contempt along with her client, Amber Fry, because she speaks out, even though there is a gag order now. Isn't there a gag order? And she's still running her mouth? Look, the reason why Amber Fry's running a big trap is so that Gloria will make sure that her voicemail's full of potential clients. That's why she's running her mouth, so that Gloria doesn't have to keep chasing ambulances and packing funeral parlors with her card night after night, day after day. And by the way, Gloria, I heard you drop your card into someone's urn. I think that's really, like, low class. Sticking the card upright in the ashes of an urn, in my opinion, is way out of line. Go ahead, sue me for saying that. I'm only kidding. She didn't do that because she probably would sue. Attorney Gloria Allred said Monday she was not subject to the gag order issued in Stanislaus County that was intended to prevent more leaks, speculation, and rumors. She said Garagos was trying to silence her, a claim that brought a printed comeback from Garagos. You know what you're dealing with now, these two attorneys, just as a little bit of education, these two lawyers and this Scott Peterson, these people are so bad. I mean, they're really not very good lawyers because they ain't man enough or woman enough to actually try this thing in the court. Now, I know Allred isn't trying a case. Garagos, you are, though. So when I said not woman enough, I don't know whether I was talking about you or her, but in any event... Why don't you just try this case in the court, or ain't you lawyer enough? You know, that's the problem with you, man. You thought you could try this one in the press. You thought that you could manipulate this court, manipulate this judge, somehow spill out enough stuff, leak enough stuff, so the whole jury pool gets polluted, the entire public perception of this trial gets polluted, and you're able to win a mistrial, or you get the, you know, Scott's going to walk a la OJ. Forget it. You ain't lawyer enough to go in and try this thing, and you sure ain't lawyer enough to get this guy off by way of leaking information so that the jury pool is polluted, so that the judge looks like Lance Ito Jr., so that the whole thing is a circus. Ain't going to happen. You picked the wrong horse, the wrong time, the wrong man, and you're probably the wrong lawyer. And it all means one thing. Scott is going to be pacing the green mile. He's going to be walking that last mile playing a harmonica, as God is my witness. Scott's going to be in the last cell just... Yeah, I got the blues. That's Scott. Meanwhile, the ad's going to say, drunk driving, no problem. Call Mark Garagos. Any time, day or night. That's how this is going to look a year, 2 years from now. Mark my words, they're going to be passing a harmonica and a jew's harp back and forth to Scott Peterson there in the cell. And he's going to be playing I'm Long Gone and other Sonny Terry favorites. Where's the harmonica? Here it is. Scott Peterson, 2 years from now, on the last mile. Well. All right, coming up, Paul Tubby Lane. We'll be talking about this is really cool, man. The U.S. is cracking down in Iraq. Everybody's, like, worried about that. I think it's great. I love it. Keep going, boys. And the SUVs that flunked the latest safety test, some of them you're driving around in right now. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Our website is philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. Go there. Go to our souvenir shop. Check out our best of CDs. I feel remiss in not doing a signing of some kind because we generally get a nice crowd of people when we do we autograph our CDs so that people can come out, buy a CD, and I'll autograph it for you. We haven't done one yet this year, and we really should do one before the summer is out for the fine people at my friend's place who are willing to organize it and put it together for us. I just haven't I haven't got my act together, and I will. I promise. I swear. Anyway, go to our website. We'd appreciate it. Pick up our Best Of CD because all the money goes to my friend's place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood, California. And these are kids who have nothing, man. They've just got nothing. So over there, they try to help them out. And when you do buy the CD, the money goes to them. And I mean every nickel. We don't keep any of it. Or you can order it by calling 877-616-PHIL, 877-616-PHIL. On July the 4th, it's our annual Top 100 Calls of the Year show. We're the only talk show that actually counts them down, counts down the phone calls, that is. We don't count down the hits. We're counting down the people that called in. Because if phone calls are so all-fire important to talk shows, then by God, there ought to be a Top 100 countdown, don't you think? We got it for you. The only talk show in America that done it, does it, and we do it every New Year's. Except this year, we're doing it on the 4th of July. What did I just say? We do it every 4th of July. So check it out and join us on the 4th of July for that. Usually, we also have a holiday special. But the 4th is on Friday, right? So we won't do that this year. Also, we're lazy. Also, Mark's out of town. Also, I'd like to take a day off. Also, who else is going to do it? Pelton is going to be in New Jersey or something, you know, floating in a river. We just don't have the time. All right, the SUVs that are most dangerous. Now, these are not SUVs. These are sport utility, excuse me, SUVs, sport utility SUVs. Now, what's the difference? I don't know either. I understand that they're compact, and I understand that, you know, other than that, that they're called utility. But beyond that, I don't really know the difference between a sport utility compact SUV and a regular passenger car, because you can't get more stuff in a sport utility SUV than you can get in one of these things, than you get in a car, I should say. And I think they're for people who want to own an SUV but can't afford the 50, the 45, or the 35, whatever it is. For a regular SUV, for a larger one. What we're finding out now is that these so-called sport compact utility SUVs, some of them, two out of 12 compact sport utility vehicles are death traps? Two of them passed out of the 12 that they tested. So 10 out of 12 are death traps. The ones that scored the poorest. And here was an example of an injury that you would suffer, for example, in the Mitsubishi Outlander. Do you know this car? I see little SUVs, but I don't know if I'd recognize the Mitsubishi Outlander. If you're thinking of going to buy one, now this was a test administered by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. I'm always curious, and you should be too, who financially backs the different tests and the different institutes that create these tests or that administer these tests, because that can sometimes tell you an awful lot. For instance, I saw a story here about fat people and how obesity is costing companies, I don't know, $12 billion. $12 billion a year, right? And this was an estimate by the Washington Business Group on Health, an employer group that lobbies on health policy. Well, what does that mean? Lobbies on health policy. You know, it must be somebody that's got like an anti, they're like in the anti-donut lobby or something. So, the test was given to the various cars. In the Mitsubishi Outlander, the worst, the crash barrier, went into the compartment and took the dummy's head off. Right into the compartment of the car and took the dummy's head clean off. There is an illusion of safety when you're in one of those things. You think it's very, you know, It's heavy duty, but it's not. You could flip those things over. Like, remember the old Jeep Wranglers? And I don't know if they've improved the rollability on those things. The Toyota RAV4. Now, I know a lot of you own that, and I hate to break the news to you. According to these people, and these are the SUVs that scored the poorest. The new Honda Element. And Honda's a sponsor of mine. My local sponsor is Honda, but I gotta report it as I see it here. The new Honda Element. Now, I had a Honda Odyssey. Fantastic. It was great. Naturally, when I get the plug in there, right? By the way, the Honda Accord is great, and my son drives a Honda Accord. And the Saturn View. What are these names? The Saturn View, the Honda Element? Doesn't exactly inspire. The Outlander? The Mitsubishi Outlander. First of all, what's a Saturn view? I'm going to get a view from Saturn is what I'm going to get. I'll get airborne. The new Honda Element. That sounds like something that cooks. I don't know about you. Then there's the Land Rover Freelander. Now, Land Rover is, wasn't Land Rover, isn't that like a poor man's Range Rover? And, because I know the Range Rover is the bigger and the more expensive, but the Land Rover is, put her microphone up, will you?
The Range Rover is like a bigger sedanish looking one. The Land Rover has is like a more bubble looking one. It looks like a
The Freelander is a piece of crap according to this.
Tiny.
Yeah. The Suzuki Grand Vitara. That's another. Now these are SUVs that apparently were scoring very low in this test, and so don't drive them. Isn't that great? If you're in the car business, the National Institute of who are you? You're the National Institute of what? Of lies? I got to sell these things for a living, man. Thank you very much. Okay, if you want to sell them and have people burn alive in a death trap, you know they're going to burn alive. You just did a test on the thing. I've driven a Toyota RAV my entire life. I put my kids in that thing. Then I lock them in it, and I roll it into a lake. And not once has any of them complained. The Suzuki Grand Vitara. You know, they give them these names so you don't even know what the hell it means. It could mean the Suzuki Grand Death Trap. Vitara, what is that? Is that Chinese for the Suzuki Grand Funeral? Coffin. Why don't they just come out with the Plymouth Coffin? New for 2003, the Plymouth Coffin. The Dodge Casket. The Dodge Rolling Casket. Built Dodge Truff. Tough. You know, those you can see the under chassis of trucks flying over you. The new Dodge Casket. By the way, next year, the Saturn Urn, I hear it's just a marvelous car, be coming out. 1-800-449-8686. Paul Tubby Lane on the new gay demographic of NASCAR fans. We also have more on Jessica Lynch. What an unbelievable story that's turning into. What a bizarre and disgusting story that's turning into. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Jessica Lynch is in a private hospital room at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. She is guarded by military police. She has no contact with people other than her father and her immediate family. She undergoes daily physical therapy, but she does it alone. She's not allowed to contact anyone. What's going on? What's going on? If I find out they're pulling something cute in Washington, I'm going to be really upset. You know that? If I find out the Defense Department put this thing together as a propaganda piece, man, stuff's going to happen. I don't know what. First of all, I'll probably need to go to the bathroom. That'll be the first thing that's going to have, you know, I'll need to purge. Then other things will happen. Jessica Lynch, the most famous soldier of the Iraq War, remains in a private room at the end of a hall on an upper floor of Walter Reed Army Medical Center, her door guarded by military police. To repair the fractures, a spinal injury, and other injuries suffered during her ordeal, the 20-year-old private undergoes a daily round of physical therapy, but she does so alone during the lunch hours when other parents are not admitted, or excuse me, when other patients are not admitted. Her family says she doesn't remember anything about her capture. Yeah. Well, then something heavy happened. If she doesn't remember anything about her capture, was she hit on the head? Is she undergoing any, was there a fracture of her skull? Was there a concussion? Was she drugged by the Americans? Was she drugged by the Iraqis? I'm willing to believe anything at this point. I'm going to tell you right now, if the Pentagon and Bush are making a chump out of me, because I supported that war, if they're trying to make a chump out of the people that supported that war, that guy better just forget about rerunning in 2004. This story blows up in his face. As the world would remember, Lynch and her army maintenance unit was ambushed in southern Iraq. 11 of her fellow soldiers killed, 5 others taken captive. Lynch was taken prisoner, held separately for 9 days. Initial reports, including those in the Washington Post, citing unnamed U.S. officials with access to intelligence reports, said that she emptied her M16 into Iraqi soldiers. She was stabbed. She was shot multiple times. She killed several of her assailants. She was fighting to the death, one of the officials said. She did not want to be taken alive. Well, guess what? It's all crap. It never happened. It became the story of the war, boosting morale at home and among the troops. It was irresistible. It was cinematic. The maintenance clerk turned woman warrior. Well, you know what, folks? Guess what, sports fans? This story ain't exactly what happened. And what's going on now more than anything else is the so-called embedded journalists. These are the guys that spread this stuff. These embedded journalists, they're about as much journalist as my daughter, who's 11 years old, is a journalist. She could have gone over there and ferreted out more real news, more real hard news than all of those guys put together. That's how good they were. You guys ought to be ashamed of yourselves. You know what you cats are? You're chump change. You know what that means, don't you? That means you ain't a pro. You're a bunch of amateurs. You got your chain yanked by the Pentagon or some army guys that wanted to get a good spin on a story, and you couldn't wait to throw it out there. Why would anybody want to believe the United States would actually try to kill Western reporters with a blast from a tank? They're doing too good of a job spreading this manure. But they said they were going after Reuters reporters or whatever. Oh, please. Why? They're doing a great job spreading this garbage about some rescue operation. You know, some people, you know, they take a stand. Some people take a stand. See, the easy thing to do, despite what you would hear, the easy thing to do was to stand against this war. That was the easy thing to do. Some people would have you actually believe it was the harder thing to do. No, it wasn't. It was easy. It was easy to criticize this war. It was difficult to say it was necessary because you didn't really know what the ramifications of this Iraq war would be. I felt it was a necessary war, still do, because the future, and I'm talking about the next 50 to 70 years of American position in the world, depended upon us inserting ourselves into a hostile, hostile region that wanted nothing more than our destruction. And getting rid of a terror-sponsoring gangster like Hussein was an absolute necessity. Now, so we put our little tiptoes out on a limb, and what do we get for our trouble? We got the United States Army concocting some baloney about some woman. And by the way, just so you know, this has set the cause of women in the military back about 10 years. Thank you very much, U.S. Army. You have set the cause of women in combat back at least 10 years with this story. It became the story of the war. It was irresistible. It was cinematic. Lynch's story is far more complex and different than those initial reports. Much of the story remains shrouded in mystery, in large part because of official army secrecy, concern for Lynch's privacy, and her limited memory. The Washington Post's initial coverage attracted widespread criticism because many of the sources were unnamed, and because the accounts were soon contradicted by other military officials. While much more is revealed about her ordeal, most U.S. officials still insist that their names be withheld from any reporting. Lynch tried to fire her weapon, but it jammed, according to military officials. She did not kill any Iraqis. She was neither shot. She was not stabbed. Lynch's unit, the 507th Maintenance, was ambushed outside Nasiriyah after taking several wrong turns. Army investigators believe this happened in part because superiors never passed on word that the 3rd Infantry Division's column that the convoy was following had been rerouted. So in other words, they had their heads up their ass over there. Which happens, it's the Army. Lynch was riding in a Humvee when it plowed into a jackknife U.S. truck. She suffered major injuries, including multiple fractures, compression to her spine that knocked her unconscious, etc. The collision killed or gravely injured the Humvee's 4 passengers. U.S. officials with knowledge of the Army investigation said Lynch was mistreated by her captors. I don't even know that happened. I don't know that anything happened. I don't know that there was any Iraqi army within miles. How do I know? Maybe she was taken captive by the seven dwarfs, and they took her over there, and then the army releasing that tape with the guys coming out. Who are you guys kidding? What do you think this is anyway? Do you think that I'm sitting here for my health, man, supporting this effort by our country, paying my tax dollars so you guys can play games over there? You think the American people go off to work every day and go ahead and be loyal and faithful to the United States government in its efforts in Iraq so you guys can turn around and screw with us? You see, I'm not one of these mouthpiece conservative talk show hosts. I'm not a conservative talk show host at all. I'm just an American. And when I see something that's right, I say it's right. But you're going to turn around and you're going to stick it to us? Make us look like chumps? That's what we get, huh? And that embedded journalist thing, the only thing those guys got embedded is each other. That's what they got embedded. They're spending too much time around a campfire, if you know what I'm talking about. You guys in the media that covered that Iraq war, you ought to be ashamed of yourselves. There's never been a worse job of covering a war in the history of man on this planet. Never a worse job. In Vietnam, they actually took their lives into their hands, and they went and got stories that the military didn't want them to get. In the Second World War, they were on the ground with the troops, trying to tell the story as it happened. You guys were hired errand boys. You were errand boys. You ought to hang your heads in shame. And that includes you guys at Fox, CNN, NBC, CBS, ABC, all of you. You're chump change. You're lightweights, and you absolutely have nothing whatsoever in common with the great journalists like the Cronkites and the Collingswoods and the Edward R. Murrows and whoever the hell else you want to talk about that went before you. You guys couldn't figure out whether or not the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow morning. You're going to have to, what are you going to do, make something up about that too? And now the Army's making a jackass out of you, and the Washington Post, which supposedly is this reputable newspaper, they're the biggest jackasses of all. And I'm going to tell you right now, what's Bush doing? What's he doing? Is he sitting around doing what? Isn't he the commander-in-chief? This, to me, is a story. This makes the American people look stupid. If I'm Bush, I'm going to find out what happened. What are you guys doing? You making up stories? Now, what happened? Did this woman plow into an Iraqi column, or did she not? Did she kill anybody? No, sir, she didn't. Well, then what the hell happened? Well, as far as we know, sir, she got into an accident. The Iraqis took her to a hospital. Well, what are we doing with a rescue operation with 90 million? And how did the story come out that she was firing her weapon? How'd that happen? Well, as far as we know, sir, somebody in the, well, fire the son of a bitch. How about that? Was it you? I'm afraid it was, sir. Goodbye. And he leaked this stuff to the press. Why? Well, he kind of made it up, sir. Made it up? Why was he making it up? Weren't we winning the war already? What, are you going to make up news? I thought we were looking good enough. Isn't there enough guys dying over there? Can't you get a good story?
Well, we thought it would be good for women in the military, sir.
Thought it would be good for... And you're making me look like a freaking horse's ass is what you made me look like. All of you guys are fired. Bring in Colin Powell. He's fired, too. And while we're on the subject, Cheney, you get out of here.
Yes, sir.
That's what ought to happen. You think it will? Of course not. No, it won't happen. Jessica Lynch is going to be, God bless the girl. You know, I'm not talking about her. She's got to get better, and we're glad she's home. I'm talking about all this fantasy that got concocted around her. Somebody's head shouldn't roll. I think some other body parts ought to slide off and roll across the floor. Other than that, it's not bothering me at all. Our website, philhendryshow.com. Check it out. We got our best of CDs and great summer buying opportunities. Say, what are you going to be wearing around the pool this summer? I suggest a Western Estates polo shirt. Yes, the Western Estates Homeowners Association polo shirt is a beautiful shirt to just wear with a pair of shorts, sit around, have a brew. Or if you go out for the evening, the Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt. We also have, for just casual wear, the Phil Henry T-shirt. We have the Jay Santos Citizens Auxiliary Police T-shirt, as well as the jacket. The pouch jacket comes in blue or black. And by pouch jacket, I mean you can fold the whole thing up into a pouch. While you're cruising to work in the morning, you can pour beer into your coffee into your Citizens Auxiliary Police travel mug. And, of course, there is the coffee and latte black and white Phil Henry mug, which looks a little gay to me, but they told me that we're moving a lot of them, so that's fine. So check it out. It's all on our website. It's all at our souvenir shop. It's all there for you, baby. The Phil Hendry website, philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Well, guess what? More kids have stay-at-home moms. Isn't that great? Yeah, 41 million and counting. And that's just fantastic, isn't it? You remember, it's better to stay at home with your kids. So, ladies, you're really, you know, you're blowing it if you ain't staying at home with your kids. Yeah, well, maybe some of them can't afford it. What do you think about those apples, huh? And what if they got some slob for a husband and a father who ran off and they don't have the bread to stay at home? You ever thought about that one? With all due respect to the Dr. Lauras of the world, and I'm my kid's mom and I'm a stay-at-home mom, why don't you go pound it? Let me explain life as it is. My wife, when I met her, was the mother of four children, still is. Actually, now she's the mother of five children. A little self-effacing humor. And when I met Maria, she was raising her children, working as a morning show radio producer in Los Angeles, also working as a promotions director, running back and forth between Los Angeles and her home in Thousand Oaks, getting up at 3 in the morning to produce the morning show, then getting back to make sure that the kids got off to school, then getting back for a promotion that she had to do at night, then getting up in the morning, taking care of her children, doing it on a budget, because she wasn't getting all that much money from you-know-who. Doing it on a budget. Clipping coupons. Hey, you want to know something? She couldn't be a stay-at-home mom. Ain't that too bad? There's no such thing as a woman having a career and being a stay-at-home mom. No such thing at all. I don't care who you're talking about. And when I read these stories about more kids now than ever before have stay-at-home moms, I ask myself, is that good? Is it bad? Do I care? Why do you keep pushing this information at me like it's something really important? It's not important. I don't care whether your kid's got a stay-at-home mom or not. I would take the time that my wife has spent with her children, the quality time, even though she was hustling two gigs, a single mother of four kids, I would take the time she spent with her kids over most of the stay-at-home time I see a lot of these moms have with their kids. How about them apples? And as far as somebody talking to women about being a stay-at-home mom when they themselves have a career, is the height of hypocrisy. And let me explain one other thing. See, I mentioned this last week, and it bears repeating. Just because you have a kid doesn't make you an expert on being a mom. And I know a lot of you mothers out there, you just had a kid, and guess what? You're an expert. Maybe you had twins, and now you know how the whole lay of the land goes, don't you? You got it all figured out. You know exactly how Junior's going to be raised, and you know what kind of a person he's going to be. Well, no, you don't. There's some women out there with one kid want to tell women out there with four or five kids how to do it. Good luck, man. There is a world of difference between having one and two children, and there's a universe of difference between one and three children, and there are infinite galaxies difference between one and five children, and it's like the Incredible Hulk's, it's a gamma ray thing between one and six children. You're going to have to transmute into another dimension, man. You'd have to become the Hulk to become a mom of six kids. And it's tough. And, of course, now we live in a society where you're not supposed to use birth control, and you can't have abortion, but you got to be stay-at-home, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. You know, there's going to be a revolution soon, a reaction soon, to the mixed messages that women get about what they're supposed to do to be mothers. Now, if she wants to go have a career and she wants to have her kids taken care of by a nanny, but she can still, she's mother enough to do it both, then she's mother enough to do it both. And if she ain't good enough, if she ain't woman enough, and she's got to stay at home with her kids because she can't handle it both, then she can't handle it. Start giving me this crap. There's more kids with stay-at-home moms now than ever before. That is the most meaningless statistic that the world has ever, that the world of bullcrap has ever produced. And I wouldn't even have such a strong opinion if I didn't watch my wife, who I happen to love and admire very much, do it with four kids with no man in the house, still keep those kids off the street, keep them in a school, keep them studying, keep them on the straight and narrow, doing all of those wonderful, marvelous, traditional things that all these jive-ass people tell you that they should do, but she wasn't no stay-at-home mom. And she took the world's abuse. So the next time somebody wants to throw that stay-at-home mom statistic in my face, brother, you better know who you're talking to. And you better tell me why that's important. Because as far as I'm concerned, the stay-at-home mom statistic is the biggest load of jive and bullcrap since the circus left town, man, and since the guy with the shovel and the push broom was coming around. It doesn't mean a thing. Doesn't mean a thing. And if you're a mother and you've got kids and you're also working and you're doing it and you're and it's both of them are important to you, just go ahead and do it and forget all the rest of these clowns that are talking about how they're a stay-at-home mom. Good. You know, I'm glad I got into that, because now we don't have to talk about it anymore. I got that off my chest. 48 million kids now stay at home. Wow, isn't that just... what do I care? That's about as important to me as MarthaSpeaks.com. I don't know what I'm more interested in, whether Martha gets out or whether you got your stay-at-home mom. I think I'm more interested in whether Martha gets off, if you'll pardon the expression. Phil Hendry Show.
Bill Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Hi, I'm Phil Hendry, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. Our website is philhendryshow.com. What did you want me to do here? I was going to do the NFL crime file, but I thought that the priest hit and run, really? Well, a priest hit some guy and he died. All right, on to the NFL. On to the NFL crime files. Now, this priest hit a guy and he croaked. Isn't that the story? Just so happens he was the Archbishop of Phoenix, but what difference does that make? Or the bishop. They ain't got an archbishop in Phoenix. You can only be a bishop. You know that if you're Catholic, you have to know the difference between these things. Archbishop, bishop, cardinal. Those are three distinct offices. If you're a cardinal, well, if you play for the St. Louis Cardinals, it ain't so bad. Arizona Cardinals, I wouldn't want your life. But if you're a Roman Catholic cardinal... good luck. Actually, if you're an archbishop, you got the bigger pointy hat than the bishop. If you're a cardinal, you just get to wear wear a beanie. And that's basically the difference. The bishop wears a pointed hat, the archbishop wears a huge pointed hat, but the cardinal wears a skull cap, like one of those Muslim skull caps, only it's red. And they were thinking about a propeller, but they decided, nah, come on, quit being corny. Well, I just think the propeller, but what are you talking about, man? I'm the cardinal, I'm the Diocese of New York, you want to put a propeller on it. Also, if you're familiar with chess, the bishop jumps the king, so ha 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 ha. No, it doesn't jump the king, the freaking knight does, you what a metal midget. All right, Bishop Thomas J. O'Brien, already beleaguered by a sexual misconduct scandal, allegedly ran this guy over and killed him the other night in Phoenix. He's on his way back from saying Mass, and apparently this poor man was walking across the street was hit by a couple of cars. Allegedly, one of them was the car of the bishop, and he's dead. The man's name was Mr. Reed. I think it was James Reed. And he was walking across a major boulevard when he was struck. Police say that it was a jaywalking situation, so he caused the accident. If you're jaywalking, you caused the accident. What the bishop allegedly did wrong was he hit the man, allegedly, and left the scene of the accident. Let's call it leaving the scene of an accident. It's a felony, and you can get 3 years in prison. It's a class 4 felony in the state of Arizona. This is what this priest did. Now, this is coming hot on the heels of the fact that this priest could have been indicted for concealing the sexual molestation charges against his priests in his diocese. He worked out a deal with the DA in Phoenix, and as part of that settlement, he admitted concealing sex abuse cases, and he agreed to major diocese reform. A lot of people wanted him to resign. Now, the guy's got those problems, and on top of that, as he's sailing home one night, I think it was Sunday, as a matter of fact, from saying Mass, this poor guy walks out in the middle of the street, the priest hits him, and off he goes to the rectory where priests live. Believe it or not, it's called a rectory. And they go there, and they have a couple of belts before they go to bed. I don't know what the hell they do. Now, the cop shows up, and he says, Father, he says, yeah, well, apparently somebody saw you, because they followed, a good citizen followed his car and saw it. They said, well, Father, you hit a man. Someone witnessed you hitting him. Well, I don't think I did. The priest claims he thought maybe he hit a dog or a cat. Now, that's believable unless you go to look at the car. The entire left side is caved in, and the windshield is smashed. I know that happens when I hit cats. Imagine hitting a little teeny house cat and your windshield gets caved in. And the whole left side of your car is just banged up. The front fender, the side panels, everything. Just a little furry comes across and boom! Is that what you mean, Father? You trying to tell me that? It was a tiger, you idiot. Oh, okay. Both drivers left without stopping. However, a witness pursued the 2003 Buick of the priest, obtained its Arizona plate number, returned to the scene, and provided the information to police. It was registered to the Catholic Diocese of Phoenix. Sergeant Lori Williams said detectives traced the car to Father O'Brien. They were unable to locate him or the Buick until Monday morning. Investigators interviewed him at his North Phoenix residence. At one point, he came outside with them to inspect the vehicle before it was towed to an impound yard. Jesus, I mean, this is a guy. Okay, so the question's this. The guy's up to his ass in problems already. He's got this whole situation involving the priests and sexual molestation. Now he's outside and he's looking at the whole caved inside of the car and he's trying to tell him that it was a kitten that he hit or it was a dachshund. I might have hit a dachshund or something. It's just this little tiny wiener dog takes out your whole windshield. And the guy leaves the scene. And I gotta say, people love to judge, and it's fun to judge. And if another guy's in trouble, it makes us feel better because at least it ain't us, right? If you're going to look at that, and you look at the problems he had, and then he nails this guy, wouldn't you take off? And what if you'd been drinking? Let me ask you seriously. If you guys are coming home, and you know there's times you've had a white wine or you had a light ham sandwich or whatever it was that you ate or drank, and you had just one Guinness, but the cops aren't going to believe you, and you hit somebody, and you got liquor all over your breath, what are you going to do? And it's dark and nobody saw it. What are you going to do? You're damn right you're going to run. So much for the common honesty and decency of the average man, which I've never believed in anyway. I mean, occasionally life can surprise you. But if a guy can get away with murder, a guy will get away with murder. So this priest takes it on the lam, and he's got to get, you know, he's getting extra heat because he was a priest with a bunch of pedophiles who were working for him. Otherwise, he'd just be another schmuck to try to get out of a very bad situation. Now, a man is dead, and that's sad, and that's tragic. Part of the problem he's dead, though, is that he was jaywalking across a major highway. You can't do that. You got to be crazy to do that. You ever driven in Mexico? One of these days, I'm going to kill somebody down there, and I don't, what can you do? You go down through Mexico on the quote freeways. I don't even know what the hell they call them. 1 minute you're on a freeway, and the next minute it's a street going through a town. And there's people walking, and you're doing 75, and there's people leading a cow across the road. So just by like, there's Henry, you know, I'm like fishtailing to avoid this boy in a sombrero and a cow. It's like something out of a John Huston movie. Make, you know, 50 pounds of hamburger out of the kid and the cow. You're walking across the highway, so I suspect, and I say this with the greatest respect, many of the people who are day laborers, migrants, etc., in Arizona and California may be from Mexico, and they may be used to walking across these major highways. It's dangerous, baby, it's dangerous. Anyway, the priest's big mistake is he ran, and somebody saw him. I'm going to tell you something, people do it all the time. Do it all the time. I've never done it. But I know someone who has, and his initials are, I don't, although I did witness it one night as I was walking down the street. I saw somebody peel around the corner, smash right into the back end of a guy's brand spanking new Lexus, back up and take off. And if I'd had the presence of mind, I would have gotten the guy's license plate, but I thought, that's what you get, man, for parking your car in the street. You know, the same thing happened to me. When I got back to L.A. in 96, I'm sitting in my sister's apartment, and there's a knock on the door. Yeah, you know, hi, it's a lady out there. I saw a woman, she ran into your car. Is that your little red Dodge Neon out there? I go, yeah, it's a rental. And, yeah, sure it is. Anyway, I saw, you know, ladies, trying to impress her. Anyway, I saw a woman plow right into the back of it, and I have her address. I said, a lady? She's an old lady, plowed into the back of it and took off. I said, you're kidding. She said, no. All right, so I go out there, and I look at the left rear is smashed in pretty good. It's a rental car, but hey, whatever, I got to take it back and explain it. So I call South Pasadena cops, and they come over. They take the report, and the guy says, well, we found out who the lady is. I said, really? He said, yeah, it was an elderly woman who hit your car coming around the turn. It was very rainy, and she got scared and took off. She drove to her niece's house. And apparently was in a panic, and her niece called us. And so, what we're going to do, Mr. Henry, well, you know, why charge her? We're just going to, you know, obviously get the information from her for her insurance. But she's very elderly. There's no point in charging her. And I looked at the cop, and I go, you pig. No, I didn't say that at all. Guy says, if it's all the same to you, Mr. Henry, we won't charge her. What are you talking about? She took out the left rear of my car? Well, she's an elderly woman. I don't care. I don't care if she's freaking Grandma Moses. I want her inside, on the yard. Anyway, everything was cool. But it was a very nice, merciful act on the part of the police officer, I'll tell you that much. But this woman who hit my car and took off, and of course I was cursing up and down. Who would do that? Who would? Filthy, dirty, rotten slime. What primordial ooze would hit my car? It was an elderly lady, about 76. Oh, that's fine. So let that be a lesson to you. Don't run, man. Somebody's looking. Don't run. Someone will look. Even though that is your instinct, I know. Don't forget, we got Paul Tubby Lane coming up to talk about NASCAR and the new demographic that NASCAR is going after, the gay population. Tales of Guantanamo despair and more coming up on The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry. 1-800-449-8686. Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Coming up, we have the NFL crime file, but first we have this from Bob Green. He's the CEO of Fraser Foods, who believes that if any of his employees purchased a lottery ticket while they were working for him, he gets 20% of their winnings. This is Bob.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Hi, I've been a local business owner for 10 years, and if my staff won the lottery, if they pull together and absolutely hit the jackpot, I would be thrilled to death for them, and I wouldn't expect a dime out of it. Yes, I did provide their break room. Yes, I did provide their bathroom and all of that stuff. But they provide me with a very good living. And whenever I make extra money and we go above budget and above our goals, then I bonus my girls. But quite frankly, I was in corporate management for 17 years. And if this guy would walk up to one of my staff and call her a whore because he thought he was entitled to something that he's not, I think his mother needs to slap him for being stupid, number one, and slap him for using such horrible language, number two, and slap him for being so damn stupid.
Stupid.
This is just pure greed.
You bonus your girls even though they're getting tips.
I'm sorry?
I said you bonus your girls even though at any given time you get 20 guys lined up around the bar putting dollar bills in their G-strings. So why are you bonusing them?
I don't know what you're referring to, but my staff does a very good job for me. And
business,
they do not wear... They don't wear G-strings to work in, but I don't know
Job. Well, what kind of business? You said you had girls. I thought it was a strip club.
No,
she didn't say it was a strip club.
Well, what is it?
That's
I'm sorry.
That's insulting. You have the brain of a
You know something? It's interesting because you're willing to take it in the shorts. You expect me to. That's what this comes down to.
Well, what it comes down to, sir, is you are very, very greedy. And, that's going to come back to you.
Greedy?
You're greedy.
Name me a business that it... And, all right.
That's not your money.
What do you have, an escort service? I don't know. What business do you have?
I have a pet grooming...
Why are you assuming escort...
I have a pet grooming service, a pet sitting service, and a pet store. And I was in corporate management, sir, for 17 years. I was the CEO for Pillsbury before I opened my own business.
Sherry,
and
you were making very good money, you were on your fast track, you got busted out of that, and now you're combing out dogs, and you're asking me?
You know why?
How to do my business?
The lady said she graduated to owning her own business. She's not working for anybody anymore. She works for herself.
I make over $400,000 a year, sir.
Yeah, okay, but you're on a corporate fast track, and now you're cleaning up you're wiping some dog's rear end.
And you know what? I make twice what you make.
How do you know how much I make?
I know. I made over $400,000 last year. What'd you make, buddy?
You know what? We had a bad year. You're right. We had a bad year.
Okay. So you know what? That's not your prerogative to take money out of your employees' pockets.
Ma'am, especially...
Maybe it's your attitude why you had such a bad year. Because
it's my fault.
I don't let anybody talk like that in front of my clients.
I'm in the grocery business. In order for you to have a bad year in the grocery business, your staff has got to be letting down. And yet I didn't fire one person. Now I ask for a little piece of something that I'm entitled to, and what do they give me? And you're telling me that somehow I'm greedy.
Well,
okay,
I've never heard of anybody saying
that,
I've never heard anybody say they're entitled to 20% of lottery winnings because it happens, you know.
Okay, let me ask you and Sherry this. What if the people negotiated the sale of the lottery ticket in your home at your kitchen table?
I would be thrilled for them.
Oh, come.
Because you know what?
It's not about
the money.
I don't like lying. That's the one thing I don't like.
Bill Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Yeah, 20%. I think it's a great idea. If one of your employees hits the lottery after he buys the ticket while taking a coffee break on your time, you better believe you get 20%. Well, that's Bob's idea anyway. It's Phil Henry Show. It's now time for our NFL crime file. For 3 hours on Thursday, attorneys for the Cincinnati Bengals and the National Football League argued that Todd Portune had no legal right to sue them for $200 million. It has to do with the team's lease with the county. The decision to allow the lawsuit now will be up to Hamilton County Judge Charles Kubicki. Now, county commissioners did not want to sue the Bengals, so Mr. Portune filed it as a taxpayer, and his complaint calls the Bengals the worst team in professional football, perhaps the worst team in professional sports. It seeks a ruling that the stadium lease has been breached, a declaration that the lease is voidable at the county's discretion, and more than $200 million in damages because the Bengals' ownership has not used reasonable efforts to sustain fan interest essential for Hamilton County to profit from the lease. In other words, it's a groundbreaking lease because he says the Bengals stink so bad, stink it out so much, that they owe the taxpayers of that county money. And I say Godspeed to you, Mr. Portune. I realize that is commenting on a news story, and I should be objective, but that's just my opinion. A former detective said she told the NFL about Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay's prescription drug problem as early as 1995, according to WTHR Television Indianapolis. Renee Condor, who was a prescription drug investigator for the Indianapolis Police Department, said she began looking at Irsay's behavior as part of an investigation of a local doctor. She said she discussed Irsay's problems with Bill Mattingly, the NFL's Indianapolis security chief, first in 1995 and again in 1998. According to Condor, Mattingly said NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue had a plan in 1995 to get Irsay into the Betty Ford Center in California. When contacted by the Associated Press, Mattingly said, "I wouldn't know anything about that. That's 8 years ago." So the owner of the Colts has a drug problem. Yeah, we want to move to L.A. real soon. And finally, claiming that former New York Giants player Jeremiah Parker was in control of the abusive events that led to the death of his ex-girlfriend's four-year-old son, Bergen County prosecutors have urged a jury to convict him of aggravated manslaughter. That more coming up here on the Phil Hendry Show. Paul Tubby Lane ahead on NASCAR wooing its newest, most prosperous demographic, the gay NASCAR fan. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Former NASCAR driver and now a man who helps promote the sport, NASCAR, the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing, traditional American oval track racing, Paul Tubby Lane joins us. Paul, there is a very interesting article today in a couple of newspapers having to do with the gay demographic, the gay fan base of NASCAR, and that it is a ever-burgeoning fan base. How do you see that fan base integrating itself? Is it? It's obviously important. How important?
Well, Phil, I think that gay fans on average have more money than the average fan. And when you think about corporate sponsorships, you think about high-end merchandise, and you think about high-end marketing. You do want to target fans that do have disposable income like that. We have spent an awful lot of years, I know, marketing to African-American fans, to female fans, to our traditional straight fans, and it hasn't really had the impact that we wanted it to have.
The article is NASCAR is like number two to the NFL in terms of fans, correct?
That is correct, but that's mostly a lot of traditional fans in terms of coming through the turnstile, but they're not really buying a lot of purchasing a lot of merchandise. They don't really come up with the big money in terms of the sponsorship. So it was a very difficult decision, but I recommend it to the people I work for who work on a consultancy basis. That is difficult a decision as it may be. The black fan, now the African-American fan, the female fan, the traditional straight Southern fan is not bringing the money through the door for NASCAR the way a lot of these gay fans can, because they will pay top money for a sponsor tent to meet the drivers. It's a huge demographic that NASCAR needs to develop and nurture. Our female fans, our black fans are great fans. They just don't have the economic impact that our gay fans have.
Now, is NASCAR thinking about a section of their website devoted to gay fans?
Well, I think that they need to do that. I know I'd heard that they were going to think about a section of the website for the gay fan, because we had devoted a portion of the website. It's called the women's side to NASCAR, and that was our women fans are great. That's a big waste of time, because women just don't have the money for marketing, is what we're saying.
Well, you're talking about selling merchandise, right?
That is exactly correct, right. And when you talk about your traditional African-American fans or the female fans, they don't spend, you know, diddly squat compared to what your gay will. And the gay, they spend money for leather goods, for the leather hats, the jackets, and these kinds of things, where the women and the black will only buy, you know, like denim shorts and things like that. NASCAR's got to grow. We need to cater to the fans who can really support this great sport, and the gay fan can do that for us.
All right. Now, the other thing that I think, by the way, we're talking with Paul Tubby Lane about how NASCAR needs to expand its marketing toward the gay fan. A lot of gay fans of NASCAR racing. There's even a website called gaytona.com.
That is correct. It's a It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek site devoted to a number of drivers on a NASCAR circuit.
Now, what is the thoughts of NASCAR concerning the Confederate flag? You were saying that's kind of a negative?
It's difficult for us to say to a large base of traditional fans that you're starting to embarrass us a little bit, but I really think that the Confederate flag-waving fan of NASCAR has really gotten a little bit out of hand. We love those fans very dearly, but there's an old saying, Phil, a moped or a fat girl, if you want, or whatever. I mean, they're fun to ride, but you don't want to be seen with one. It's the same thing
I mean, we still have...
I'm sorry about the comparison. What I'm trying to say is...
Well, we still have kids listening.
I do. I'm sorry. What I'm trying to say is this. While we love our Confederate flag-waving fans, we don't really want... We can't associate with ourselves with them anymore because it's a little bit of embarrassment. It's a little bit of a kind of a Southern nose-pick image that we're trying to lose. And the gay fan and the lesbian fan will give us a sophisticated look and view that we need. And what I have proposed, and I know Ben Steele proposed it too, is that the Confederate flags be taken down. You could, in their place, have the rainbow flag, which represents the gay. Rainbow flag is a replacement, I think, for the Confederate flag, which was fine for a while, but we're trying to bring some real money into the sport, and yet you can't do that with that kind of an image.
So the Confederate flag-waving NASCAR fan holds the marketing money down? It holds down?
Yeah, well, it keeps the sophisticated fan who's got some spending money in terms of merchandising away from the sport. The gay has that kind of disposable income, and they love NASCAR. So to get gay fans out to the track, we have to make it as comfortable for them as possible. We want to make sure that their every need is seen to. We want to make sure the concessions, everything, all the merchandising is geared toward them. We want to make sure that the kinds of foods they like or what have you, and it's not much different for most people, but flying that Confederate flag and walking around and, looking disgusting. A lot of our fans are great people, but they are, I tell you, I wouldn't want them, sitting down at my kitchen table. I would, the personal hygiene of these people. But it's not that we don't appreciate the average NASCAR fan. You know the good old boys and the gals and the blacks and all these. Just they don't financially support the sport anymore. And they're holding us back.
That's kind of a heavy thing to say. We're talking to Paul Tubby Lane, who is talking about merchandising NASCAR. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. To market NASCAR successfully, you've got to go after fans with money, and the new fan base is the gay demographic, the traditional fan base. You call it black, female, and straight men. How many African-Americans?
Well, there's not a lot of African-Americans, but when we went after them and tried to market toward the African-American, we found they didn't have. And, of course, they're wonderful fans, and we do appreciate every bit of the fans we have. But the African-American fan is not, he's not exactly rolling in the money or anything like that. And same thing with the females. And the other thing that we wasted an awful lot of time on was marketing toward children. What we did, Phil, is we came out with toy replicas of the race cars the kids could have. We had child-sized team gear and hats, and that was a huge, disappointment. I mean, I couldn't give that stuff away, because how many little tiny kids come out to the track? But even if they do, their parents that bring them out there are a lot of these, the ones I'm talking about, these kind of...
What are you talking, rednecks?
Well, they're ones that... they're not going to spend a lot of money on that merchandise. They say, we'll get a little toy replica car for your kid, and these hillbillies, and they're great fans. But a lot of them are hill trash and this kind of thing.
In attracting the new gay demographic to the NASCAR fan base, you don't want to blow off your traditional fan when you call them hill trash.
No, but that's just a term that's used. People know that it doesn't mean anything bad. What I'm saying is the traditional NASCAR racing fan, who is the hill, it's kind of the bar trash or the hillbilly or what have you, is not paying the bills. So we got to get the gay in and the lesbian, and we need it. And it's also gaining a large television audience, NASCAR is. And when the camera scans over the crowd, you do want to have a fan base that looks sophisticated, that looks a little bit urban, that looks like it's well-dressed, that looks like it is an urbane crowd and is intelligent and well-spoken. And over the years, we've continuously been embarrassed every time the camera scans the crowd. We've got a lot of the hill people are out there.
Well, when you say the hill people, are you talking about the red?
Well, yeah, a lot of the country redneck and this kind of thing.
Paul Tubby Lane is with us. The article today that I read was very interesting, that the gay demographic is increasing. There's a lot of gay NASCAR fans, and you are actively seeking them and trying to get them into the sport because they spend money on merchandise.
That is correct, sir. And they also spend money on website memberships. They spend money on sponsorship tents. They spend money on marketing.
And the sponsorship tents are interesting. You go to a race, you sponsor a tent, and it's a...
Well, it's like a hospitality tent. And you can have a buffet of food. You have cocktails and soft drinks and this kind of thing. You can watch the race from a very good vantage point. And a lot of a lot of these people waving a Confederate flag. They're sitting out there in the back of a truck, and it makes us look stupid. We got empty tents and nobody wants to eat nothing, and there's no one there. If you get the gay, now you're talking about a fan base that'll come and get sponsorship and everything like that. So we love our traditional fans. The women, the straight men, the blacks, and the kids, but they didn't pan out. They're just not bringing any money into the sport. We need to get the money.
Well, if the gay fan was not a fan that spends a lot of money, would you be courting him?
Well, Phil, we court anybody who is good for the sport. And so, no, I mean, I'm not courting no blacks anymore. I mean, I do like the blacks, but we're not going to court them because they're not... You know, they're throwing pennies in the bucket. When you get some of these gays, they'll toss $5, $10 bills in the bucket.
1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. NASCAR's changing. A lot of new fans coming in. Gay men, lesbians, a huge demographic among gay men and lesbians, and NASCAR wants to see them made comfortable at the races as well. They spend an awful lot of money on merchandise, maybe more than the traditional fan. Do you feel as if NASCAR is blowing off its original fan base to cater to the gay fan? 1-800-449-8686. Robert, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Mr. Smith, you are just... I can't even believe you're real. I mean, you are totally blowing off the original NASCAR fan that brought NASCAR to where it's at.
Well, that's true, but we've got to take it to the next level, and those fans are good, and I want them to keep coming out to the race. But they're a little embarrassing, you know, waving that flag and all that stupid stuff. I mean, we've got to make this sport now look like something that everyone could have in their living room, no matter where they live.
Well, I'm, I guess, what you would consider a typical redneck. I live in South Alabama. I, you know, go to Talladega and Daytona and Atlanta. I spent a little over $9,000 last year going to NASCAR races. But I'm going to find out who you are, and if you were... truly affiliated with NASCAR?
Well, I tell you this, before you say that, $9,000 is a lot, but compared to the average gay fan, you'd wipe your rear end with that. And I respect you, okay? But I'm seriously, now every track has a grandstand. Would you rather see the rainbow flag above the grandstand to encourage the gay, or this Confederate flag, which is offensive to every decent human being? I'd rather see the rainbow flag of the gay, and.
But why raise either flag? Why even divide the crowd that way? Why not just have?
Because again, Phil, for years we've made the hill, you know what I call.
Why don't you just call them the straight fans?
Well, they're straight, but they're more than just the straight. They're the hillbillies, and we've made them feel welcome with their Confederate flag. And what do we get in return? We got slapped across the face with their hill trash ways. We got muddy infields and vomit, and some of these guys will urinate on the sides of cars and everything. Now if we get the gay people in, for once we don't have people urinating in the grandstands, and that's something that we need and something the sport desperately needs.
1-800-449-8686. We're talking to Paul Lane, NASCAR, looking to expand the sport's fan base to include gays, and there are a lot of gay people that are into the sport, and exclude the traditional Confederate flag-waving fan because he says they've become an embarrassment. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. You need a checkup from the neck up. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Paul Lane with us. Paul is talking about the traditional NASCAR fan is just not bringing the money into the sport the way the new fans, which includes gay men and lesbians. What's the major appeal of NASCAR to the gay demographic?
Well, I think it's the same thing, Phil, as for anyone. It's the storyline, the weekly drama of the race, the story behind the race. Plus, unlike many other NASCAR fans, most notably women and blacks, gays understand the economics of the sport better than the average NASCAR fan. They know what an engine, you know, if you tell a gay fan that an engine, you know, when an engine blows that hundreds of thousands of dollars, they know, they understand what you're talking about. They know when a car is totaled, that's millions of dollars. They know when a pit crew isn't on top of the team, the driver and the team stand to lose millions of dollars. You try to talk to the average, you know, again, I will always say that I respect and love our average fans, but you get some of this, you know, trailer trash and everything. They don't understand what it means. We've tried to educate the average fans to that and even thought they get that it's a lot of money. The average NASCAR fan can't really imagine that kind of money. So they nod and they say, yeah, it's expensive, but they don't know what they're talking about.
So I imagine the drivers and teams would appreciate more gay fans knowing the economics.
Well, you do get frustrated.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Here is Arlene. Hi, Arlene. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Paul Lane.
Yes, I have one comment to make. The South is what has put NASCAR where it is now. Gays and lesbians have not been out of the closet as long as the South has put the NASCAR where it's at. And I don't appreciate what you're saying.
Well, ma'am, I'm not trying to offend you. I'm sorry if I did. I certainly am just trying to speak the economics of the reality of the sport, and that is that the gay can certainly bring a lot of money into NASCAR, support the team, support the drivers, support the prize money.
And we don't.
Well,
I mean, what you're doing right now, you're just cutting your throat for sure.
Well, ma'am, I don't mean to put anybody down, but it's like, you know, am I supposed to get excited when, you know, you people roll in your pickup truck with your Confederate flag and, you know, and then somebody's got to clean up the human feces and everything in the infield?
And so you'd rather have them doing blowjobs behind the building, I guess, instead of having them piss on the building.
Well, ma'am, with you people, we already have that. The gays are just a little bit more discreet.
All right, okay, Jesus. 1-800-449-8686.
She doesn't like gays, and that's all right. I understand that a lot of NASCAR fans are socially not the most intelligent people, but they do it. And that's what we're hoping will happen. If we get more gay fans that the regular hill trash are...
Well, maybe if you didn't call them hill trash, that they wouldn't be angry.
I understand that, Mr. Randy. It's a reflex. When we sit around in marketing meetings, we try to identify in shorthand the different fan base. Gay... You got the knee, you know, well, some guys use the other word, and I'm ashamed of that.
What are you talking about? You're sitting in a marketing meeting, and you're using the N-word to describe your black fans?
Some of the guys. I didn't say we do. I said some of the guys do. And then there's...
Do you work for NASCAR?
No, sir, I do not.
Well, who do you work for?
I work for a consultant firm, and we try to pitch ideas to NASCAR and what they can do.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Anna, hello, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, my
yes,
name
ma'am.
Is Ima.
Ima, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I'm a black female over-the-road truck driver. I support NASCAR. I have 22 grandchildren. They have NASCAR jackets. They have NASCAR model cars. They have apps. They have keychains and et cetera.
Well, I appreciate
and
that,
this
ma'am.
This guy is just cutting his throat. NASCAR needs to fire this firm because he's on their low ratings, the other races. He sounds like he's a gay person. Himself.
Ma'am, I'm not downrating no black folks. I think they're great fans. They just don't spend the kind of money. We need to get some money in the till. You know, the whole thing is going to pay TV. We're going to have to start charging pay-per-view on these races. Now, I know
you're sitting there saying that females don't understand the price of motors and the pit team.
We found that,
et cetera.
Yes, ma'am.
That's not true.
We have found that many female fans, you can say to them, he just blew an engine, and they'll go,
and he's talking about $1 million.
That's right, ma'am. But most women will look
and
at you.
He's talking about a half a mil for his race car team there in the pit to do their work, to get it there.
See, the gay fan understands all that, but the many of the African fans I've talked to, they don't get it. And a lot of the females neither.
Well, what don't they get? You know, a guy blows an engine, it's millions of dollars to the team. They don't get that?
Yeah, but they don't. They never seen $1 million. They wouldn't know what it looks like if it came up and kissed them. But the gay has. See, that's the whole...
And you're talking about we come to the races in pickup trucks? Man, I don't drive a pickup truck. I drive a Cadillac. And when I come, I drive a Cadillac.
That's the other thing, ma'am. We can't have more black fans coming in these low-riding Cadillacs. It's just driving everybody...
Well, wait a second.
Well, you know what I'm saying. We need to get that rainbow flag going because of the Do you fly a Confederate flag, ma'am? I don't think you do you?
Hell no, I don't fly one.
All right, ma'am. Well, but what you do is you come in a Cadillac. Thanks a lot.
Well, that's the car I drive. I'm over the world truck driver. I can afford one.
All right, hey, Anna, you made some great points. Thanks for calling. Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Will NASCAR blow off its traditional fans for the gay fan? 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Henry Show is back.
What's up? Talking right now with Paul Lane. Paul is with a marketing consultancy firm. They're pitching ideas to NASCAR on how to get the gay fans more involved, because NASCAR right now would like to get that fan base involved. And you've got other plans to bring out gay fans, the gay discounted tickets, correct?
That is correct, Phil. We've got gay pit tours. And a lot of the gays, they love Dale Jr., and you can come and sit in his car and that kind of thing. Gay pit tours, as I mentioned, meet the drivers before and after the race, that kind of thing.
So I imagine the drivers and teams appreciate more gay fans knowing the economics.
Well, you do get frustrated. I can tell you when I was racing, I had an engine blower. We were done. And I was walking to the van, and one of the fans was talking to me from behind a fence saying, "You know, that's too bad, Paul. You know, I know that's a lot of money, Paul." I just said, "Oh, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about." You know, I tell you, I just got frustrated. But if it had been a gay fan, I at least would have had the assurance of knowing he knew what he was talking about, and I'd appreciate that.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Is NASCAR going to blow off their traditional fan base to get more gay fans in? Now, here is Ron. Ron, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, you say your name's Paul?
That's right, sir.
Well, are you a NASCAR representative?
No, sir, I'm not.
Well, what good do you think you're going to be doing?
Well, we're going to try to get some money into the sport.
Well, you know, as far as diversification goes, we've already paid the Rainbow Coalition $500,000 last year to keep Jesse Jackson off our back. Why don't we just fly that flag? Would that suit you?
What do you mean, we? I don't know who you represent.
NASCAR, you ain't
NASCAR, sir. You're just another one of these Okies.
I beg your pardon.
No, you're not. You're not NASCAR.
I've got a NASCAR card in my pocket right now.
Oh, great.
Sir.
Okay, so you sent in a box top. So you sent the box top in, and you got the card.
Why don't you resurrect Dick Trickle and Dick Trickle, number 69 Mary Kay Cosmetics car, come out and help you all?
Okay.
And maybe you can honk on Bobo's nose.
Ron, I tell you what, Ron.
Okay. 1-800-449-8686. Jason, go ahead.
Okay.
Turn your radio down, Ace. Jason, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I have a couple of questions. What makes gay people so rich and small? Like
they are rich, though, and that's where we're looking for their money.
He's making it sound like that most of them are seeing $1 million and that...
That's
the average
right.
person has
they understand what $1 million is. I'll give you an example. I went out to do, I was driving after Dale Earnhardt, God rest his soul, passed on. I was driving by his home, and I saw all these fans that were parked outside his house. They were standing there with flowers, and they were, you know, pretending like they knew who Dale was. And I finally couldn't take it any longer. I stopped. I got out of my car. I just yelled at him, "Get the hell out of here." I ran them all off. You know, they didn't know that man. But the gay will take the time. I ran them off. I threw it, and they left some empties laying around. I just threw the empties at them. See,
okay, well, another question.
The gay knows the win-loss statistic, what kind of engine he uses, all about the pit crew and so forth.
Well, how much do you think that one average fan should pay? I mean, you're saying $9,000 from one person.
If you
have a fan base of,
how many races you go to a year? You know, how many races you go to a year? If you pull your pickup truck into the infield and say you buy six Monster beers at $5, that's $30. I guess that's a lot of money to you, but how many T-shirts are you buying? How many of the replica stock cars are you buying? How many of the memorabilia is you buying? If the truth be known, I think the drivers themselves appreciate the gay fan more than the hillbilly because it puts more money in their pockets.
All right, thanks, Jason. 1-800-449-8686. Last call here. Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Paul.
Yes, sir.
I just got a question for you. I mean, just like one of the callers earlier said, your basic redneck and hillbilly have been a NASCAR fan for a good number of years. They've been there for a hell of a lot longer than the gay population have.
People have.
Especially since they haven't come out of the closet until recently. Don't you think...
Well, you're just repeating
what
some lady already said, sir. Do you have anything original to say?
Don't you think that you are risking chasing away the millions upon millions of rednecks and hillbillies that do support NASCAR in whatever way that they do? Okay,
we don't
just
care.
Just for a handful of gays.
I don't care.
You don't care.
No.
I mean, penny amount to a lot.
No, we don't need
the number of people that are out there.
Yeah, we don't need
all those
dumbasses.
You're talking about a handful of gay people that will contribute a hell of a lot.
I'm trying to answer your question, sir. You won't let me answer your question. I'm saying we don't care about a bunch of dumbasses. We want some money.
Well, who are the dumbasses?
All those dumbasses that are waving their Confederate flags. We'll be bringing in millions and millions from rich gays, and what am I getting, like $50 from some dumbass in a truck? Come on,
okay,
man. Add it up.
What's $50 times a million? What's $50 times a million?
Okay, what's $100 times a million? Can you add that up? Good.
Yeah, well, I got to tell
you get
this,
that
much,
one,
you won't get a million gay fans out there compared to the million...
Well, I might not get a million, but I know we'll get you.
Out there.
I know we'll
just
get you.
Even at $10 per truck or even at $1 per truck, if you've got 10 million people out there,
can ask you $10
each.
Let me ask you a question.
A hell of a lot
how much
more
do you spend?
Demographic.
How much do you spend at a race?
Pardon me?
How much do you spend at a race?
I go out there and I spend an average of $200-$300 every time I go out.
And you're gay?
No, I am not gay.
Wait a minute. You started the whole club.
With
you,
children.
$300 and...
Absolutely.
So you
I
are
buy the T-shirts, no, I buy the mugs,
he's,
I buy
Bill,
the
if you're spending $300, if you spend $300 at a race, you got to be gay. Because I've
you
never heard of a hillbilly.
You're crazy
come
with
on.
That.
No.
You are absolutely
no. How do you
just
figure?
By saying that.
Look, Bert and
okay,
his horse
you apparently
race,
have no idea what you're talking about.
I know exactly
you
what I'm talking about.
An affluent, intelligent individual can go to a NASCAR race and spend $300.
No, I'm saying, you sound intelligent, but the average dumbass don't spend that kind of money.
And the average dumbass spends about $10 or $15 or $20.
Right, you can't get tap water with that money.
$10 million is what?
You
answer
can't
that
get,
question
look,
for me.
Ed, you can't get tap water with the kind of money that these hillbillies...
Versus the 500 or 1,000 or maybe 800 gays that would go to a NASCAR race.
All right, I'll give you an example.
Compared
you
to
can
10,000 people
I'll give you an example.
Stand.
You give me six hill trash, or I'm sorry.
Why don't we just call them six regular?
All right, six regular people and their kids. They can't come close to bringing in the kind of money that two gay boys can bring in on any given race. Two of them. Because they buy the leather gear.
There's another thing that you're wrong in. That's another thing that you're wrong
in. No, you don't know what you're talking about, sir. I've studied the whole matter from upside and down.
I even went out. A handful of those.
I even went out. I had sex with a man just to make sure I knew what I was talking about.
You know what?
Okay.
Only a handful of those gay people have the kind of money you're talking about.
Well, I went out
okay,
and
so
I had,
doing, you're tar- you're,
I had
you're,
active
you're
sex in a bathhouse with a
much
man
larger
so
demographic,
I could study the situation.
A much larger money-making demographic by bringing in the gay population
yeah, right.
and targeting
okay.
them.
Yeah, I want to get Bocephus and his toothless wife in the back of a truck waving a Confederate flag because that's really the high-dollar demographic. Buddy, what are you smoking? And give me a puff on it before you throw it away.
Hey,
I've had
we are
sex
talking, we
with
are
two
talking
men in
numbers.
A bathhouse.
We are talking.
All right.
We are
thanks
talking.
Very much.
Jesus.
All right.
And I was being made love to by this gay man, and I asked him, "Do you like NASCAR?" He said, "Hell yeah." I said, "Well, that's what we got to do."
All right. Well, good going, Steve. Or what is it, Steve Bozell, or is it Paul Lane?
This is Steve Bozell. I'm Paul Lane.
Well, that's the same guy.
1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Car dealers in our next life.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
We're very happy on the Phil Henry Show to catch up with an interview that we have been chasing for some time since we read the news in the entertainment pages about this lady's activities. We're really interested in finding out a little bit more about the life and the times and catching up with Demi Moore. Demi Moore is on the line with us. Demi, thank you very much for joining us. And I know that there's a lot going on in your life, especially right now. Are you at the dentist right now? Demi, you there?
Yeah, Phil, I'm right here.
Okay, are you at the dentist?
Yeah, I am, Phil. I'm here to get my my teeth. I actually am getting a root canal. So
Right now?
I'm due in, but the doctor tells me I can do the interview. I got my cell phone.
Demi, we wanted to talk to you. You're one of, many people consider you to be one of the sexiest women. Are you really one of the sexiest women to ever grace the screen, or is that the image?
I think that is what people have been told to believe, and so, and the, you know, I had the boob job, and the boob job was important for G.I. Jane. But I just think that people think that I'm good looking, but I really don't know whether I am or not. Right now, I'm chasing a 25-year-old guy. And
well, tell us about your relationship with Ashton Kutcher. What is that about?
Really, what that's about is me trying to feel vital. Look, there's nothing wrong with a woman having sex with a young guy. I just happen to pick a young guy who's on a very popular show, so that's obviously very self-serving. Hold on for just a minute. Phil, the doctor's going to put some tubes in my mouth, all right?
Can you talk to me?
Yeah, it's all right.
Do you want me to call later?
No, I'm fine. So, can I take the cotton out? Okay. So I picked a young guy, 25, was on a hot show. So obviously I want to get my name back in the pages with a young man. It makes Bruce jealous. And it gets me hot again because I haven't been hot for a long time.
Why do you suppose that is? Are you a good actress?
I think I'm a moderately talented actress. I think I had some heat around that Brat Pack thing. I don't think I've ever done anything at all that was worthy of Oscar consideration. I thought I was pretty good in Disclosure, but apparently the Academy thought I wasn't. Fine, great. That's, you know. Okay, hold on for a minute. Oh, that's better.
Okay.
So, and the other thing, I want to thank Drew Barrymore, who basically pulled me right out of the bar. And she pulled, literally, Drew Barrymore pulled me off a bar stool and right into Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. So I got to thank her for that.
That's terrific.
And
Ashton Kutcher, now why are you getting, why does this have to be?
The reason why I'm getting my teeth drilled, I want Ashton to know that I'm taking care of my teeth because he complained about my breath. And,
geez, that's the thing, you know, you're 41. I mean, I think you're an attractive woman.
Well, thank you.
What do you have to 25-year-old guy? So, I guess the sex is pretty good though with a younger guy.
Yeah, it is. And also, I'm not talented enough to find older guys who could actually, you know, haul my ashes. And I'm sorry, Phil, but the last 2 years, my ass is falling. And hold on for a minute.
You son of a
bitch! Oh, that's good.
So you're enjoying it, huh?
Just like like Bill Murray and Jack Nicholson. So that's what I'm doing, and Ashton Kutcher, interesting last name, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Ashton Kutcher is just a great guy. So that's it, Phil. I'm bored with you now, and I'd like to hang up.
Why is that painful?
I don't. Why is it painful?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't use anesthetic.
Why not?
Because it keeps my breasts firm and high. What the hell is with you? Why not? I never use anesthetic when I get my teeth drilled, because it keeps me young, firm, and...
Still 41.
Right. man, that's good.
All right. Well, listen, Demi, thanks a lot. The best of luck in your life and times and your career with Charlie's Angels Full Throttle appearing in theaters right now, huh?
I wouldn't know.
All right. Thank you, Demi Moore.
Uh-huh.
So that was Demi Moore, and I apologize. She was getting a root canal while she was talking to us, so we wanted just to apologize for that. She's going to be doing great, I think. I'm going to go see the movie Full Throttle and hope she does a dance like Cameron Diaz at the beginning of the last one. All right. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. So that's Demi Moore. Other news around the country that I wanted to talk briefly about. The Israelis kicking ass? Nah, forget that. Oh, why not? Anyway, Sharon said that he's going to hound Hamas, which rejects a ceasefire bid. You know how lucky they are to have this guy, Sharon? He kills, man. Kills and kills yet again. And what he's doing down there is a beautiful plan. He's going to force those Palestinians into a civil war. That's what's going to happen. He's not taking any crap. And the sooner those guys get their heads out of their rear ends, the faster things are going to get going in the right direction. Otherwise, it's civil war time in Palestine, man. And that'll make that Lebanese civil war look like a ball game. It'll look like an afternoon at Anaheim Stadium. An afternoon down there at Edison Field. Unbelievable. All right, Hillary Clinton has said that apparently she forgives Monica Lewinsky. Here's the bottom line in this Hillary book as I've been able to see it. The book is not worth buying because the only thing about it is the Hillary thing. That's it. I finally figured this book out. There's nothing else in it. That's why they wanted it. There's like two pages, and then she gobbed Cohn, and that's it. And then the rest of it is how she came up. Who, there's nobody that I know wants to read. Yes, I think she's an interesting woman, but it ain't the big bestseller that everybody thinks it's going to be without that Monica Lewinsky stuff. Of course she forgives her. It was $8 million up front. I would too. Mel Gibson has rebutted criticism of his religious film. I don't know if you heard this or not, but Mel Gibson's made a movie about Jesus Christ that's in Latin and Aramaic. It's not in English. And it shows the Jews killing Jesus. And apparently it has offended some people because they say it's anti-Semitic. The Catholics say it's anti-Catholic. Mel Gibson says that it's a perfectly marvelous movie and nobody can understand a freaking word of it. So how do they know? The film has not yet found a distributor. The whole movie is in Latin and Aramaic with no English subtitles. I'm going to go see it. I am. I'm going to see if I can sit through it. Hey, you know what? It's not a hard thing. I've sat through hours of Spanish television, just hours, just watching those dance shows where the chick's wearing a thong. Who needs to know what they're talking about? And I even watched the Mexican science fiction. I think it was like Hercules versus the Vampire Women. It was, you know, Mexico's got quite a thriving film industry. So I can sit through, if I can sit through Hercules versus the Vampire Women, I can sit through The Life of Christ. You know, Mel, let me just say this, if I may. Mr. Gibson, if I see you in that movie go, or anything having to do with Braveheart, I am going to machine gun the screen. Why am I supposed to look forward to a movie from you, man? You know? The guy says it's art. Look, you butchered up the Patriot. You carved up Braveheart. What the hell has this guy done that's, like, so artistic? I mean, the guy makes great action movies. What, if you turn the life Lethal Weapon 4, yeah, there's some real art, man. If you turn this into an action movie, I guess if you can turn The Life of Christ into an action film, then, brother, I tip the hat to you. Anybody can make Braveheart an action movie. Make The Life of Christ an action movie. You know, anytime, like Jesus versus man, no, just the whole life of Jesus, where maybe you're just standing there on your horse dressed in a kilt going, because you realize you're like in the wrong era or something. God, I hate you. Nah, you're okay, Mel. You twerp. You midget. 1-800-449. I'm the only guy who doesn't like Braveheart. It really sets me apart at parties. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.